Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're diving headfirst into electric flux.
Sounds good.
Now, that might sound a bit abstract, but picture like a window open during a rainstorm. Electric flux is kind of like measuring how much rain is passing through that window.
Okay.
You know, the stronger the downpour, the bigger the window, the more rain gets through, right?
You're right. Makes sense.
Similarly, electric flux measures how much electric field is passing through some surface.
That's a great visual, actually. And building on that idea of flux, we get to something really powerful in electrostatics, Gauss's law.
Okay, Gauss's law.
Yeah. Essentially, it tells us that the total electric flux going through any closed surface, like a completely sealed container, maybe a balloon, is directly related to the amount of electric charge trapped inside that container.
Oh, interesting. So what's inside matters.
Exactly. More precisely, the law states it's equal to the total enclosed charge, let's call it Q, divided by a fundamental constant. That constant is called the permittivity of free space.
Epsilon naught. Okay.
So the magic equation is just the book equals Q.
Okay.
Flux equals enclosed charge over this constant.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. So Gauss's law is giving us a shortcut then.
That's a good way to think about it.
Instead of like painstakingly calculating the electric field at every tiny point on a surface.
Which can be really hard.
We can just figure out the total charge inside and bam, we know the total flux.
That's the core idea.
So our mission today is to really, you know, wrap our heads around this law, understand where it comes from, why it's such a game changer for solving these electrostatics problems.
Right.
We've got some excellent resources, including derivations and examples from a physics textbook to guide us.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here, and something the source material emphasizes, is that Gauss's law isn't some like isolated trick.
Okay.
It's actually deeply connected to the more fundamental Coulomb's law.
Coulomb's law. The force between charges, F equals KQ1 Q2 over R squared, that one.
Exactly. That describes the force between individual charges. And we can actually derive Gauss's law from Coulomb's law, well, at least in specific scenarios.
Okay.
And doing that gives us a much better feel for, you know, its underlying reality. It's not just pulled out of thin air.
Okay, here's where I start to see the real power. The source material walks us through the derivation for just a single point charge. Let's picture it.
Okay.
Imagine a single charge, Q, sitting perfectly at the center of a sphere with radius R.
Got it. Point charge, center of the sphere.
Now, from Coulomb's law, we know the electric field E at any point on the surface of the sphere. It's E equals Q for pa R.
Right. The standard field for a point charge.
And this field always points straight outwards from the charge, radially.
Exactly. Radially outward. Now, to think about the flux, how much of this electric field is actually passing through the sphere's surface, we can imagine breaking down the sphere into countless tiny little patches.
Okay, little surface bits.
Yeah, let's call one of them, huh? The electric flux through just one of these tiny areas is given by the dot product. It's E dot AS.
The dot product. Okay, so the angle matters.
Right. When the field and the surface normal, the direction pointing out from the surface are aligned, the flux is maximum. If they're perpendicular, the flux is zero.
And for our perfectly symmetrical sphere, because the electric field radiates straight out from the center, and the outward direction of each 20 surface patch also points straight out.
They're parallel.
They're always in the same direction. So that angle is zero, and cosine of zero is just one.
Right. So that simplifies the dot product nicely.
Yeah.
Us, it just becomes E times ES. No cosine needed for this specific case.
Nice.
And if we now substitute the expression for the electric field E from Coulomb's law.
The Q over 4 pi epsilon naught R squared thing.
Exactly that. We get Q 4 times E. That's the flux through one tiny patch.
Okay. So to find the total electric flux through the entire sphere, we just need to add up the flux through all those tiny area elements, right? Sum them all up.
Precisely. We sum up all the Abes. So AVE, the total flux, is the sum of Q4S for every tiny AVEs on the sphere.
Okay, now wait. Looking at that term, Q, Q is the charge at the center. That's constant. A is a constant. And OR, the radius, is the same for every point on the sphere.
Correct. All those terms are constant as we move around the sphere.
So we can pull them out of the sum, times the sum of all the little A's areas.
Exactly. And what is the sum of all those tiny area elements, OS, over the entire surface of the sphere?
That's just the total surface area of the sphere.
You got it. Which we know is 4 phase.
Okay. So substitute that in. H press multiplied by 4 phase. And look what happens.
The 4 cancels out. And the OR cancels out too.
Yep. Leaving us with
A is a Q.
Wow!
And there you have it. That's Gauss's law, derived for this simple case of a point charge inside a sphere.
That's really elegant how that worked out.
It is. So the big takeaway here is that Gauss's law isn't some totally separate law. It's really another way of expressing Coulomb's law. It just focuses on the field's behavior over a whole surface, not just the force between points.
Like looking at the forest instead of individual trees, maybe?
That's a perfect analogy.
Okay.
And this result, yours QI, it seems simple, but it has really profound implications. The textbook stresses this point. Gauss's law holds true for any closed surface.
Any shape. Any size. Doesn't have to be a sphere.
Doesn't matter. Box, blob, lumpy potato shape. As long as it's closed, the total flux is enclosed. Mm-hmm. That sphere was just, you know, convenient for the derivation because of the symmetry.
Okay, so the Q in the law is always the total charge enclosed by whatever closed surface we choose.
Yes, the total charge inside. And those charges can be anywhere inside the surface. Doesn't have to be at the center.
That's a really crucial point because the electric field itself, the E on the left side of the equation whose flux we're calculating, that field is actually produced by all the charges around, inside and outside.
Absolutely right. The field of the surface depends on everything. But when you calculate the net flux through that closed surface,
only the inside charges matter for the total.
Exactly. It's like the charges outside might send field lines into our surface, but those same lines have to go back out somewhere else. So their net contribution to the flux through the closed surface cancels out to zero.
Okay, I think I'm getting that. And this arbitrary closed surface we pick, there's a name for it, right?
Yep, that's what physicists call a Gaussian surface. It's basically an imaginary surface, a mathematical tool we construct to apply Gauss's law.
And the trick is choosing a helpful one.
Precisely. The real power comes when you choose a Gaussian surface that matches the symmetry of the charge distribution you're studying. That makes the calculation of the flux, that E dot ds integral, much, much easier.
Now, the textbook had a warning, something about not letting the Gaussian surface pass right through a point charge.
Yes. That's a technical point, but important. The electric field from a point charge blows up, goes to infinity right at the charge's location. So the field isn't well-defined there, and it messes up the math.
Okay, so avoid putting the surface right on top of a tiny point charge.
Right. However, it is okay for the Gaussian surface to pass through a continuous charge distribution, like, say, the middle of a charge slab or something.
Got it. And one more really interesting thing you mentioned earlier, that connection to Coulomb's law. The source material says Gauss's law basically relies on that inverse square part, the 1 over r squared.
Fundamentally, yes. The elegant simplicity of Gasgarian-Whittier is directly tied to the fact that the electric field from a point charge falls off exactly as 1 r da. If Coulomb's law was, say, one or another or one Ravigi, Gauss's law wouldn't look like this.
Wow. So if someone did an experiment and found a tiny violation of Gauss's law,
that would actually imply that Coulomb's law isn't a perfect inverse square law. They're deeply linked.
Okay, so Gauss's law is this powerful general principle. But how does it actually, you know, make life easier in practice? Let's look at that first example from the textbook, a non-uniform field.
Right. Let's set it up. We have an electric field that only points in the x direction. So A and S are zero.
Only in x.
And this x isn't constant. It depends on position. EO times the square root of x, where A is just a constant, 800 NC EO.
Okay, so the field gets stronger as x increases.
Exactly. Now, we place a cube in this field. It's got side length A, which happens to be 0.1 meters here. And it sits extending from x, a to x equals 2a.
So one face is at x, well, at 0.1 meters, and the opposite face is at x, 0.2 meters.
Precisely. The question is, what's the total electric flux through this cube, and then what's the total charge inside the cube?
Okay, where do we start? It's a cube, six faces.
Well, first think about the field direction. It's only in x. What does that tell us about the flux through the top, bottom, front, and back faces, the ones perpendicular to y and z?
The field is parallel to those faces, like the rain blowing sideways past the window.
Exactly. The field lines just skim along those surfaces. They don't pass through. So the E dot A's calculation gives zero for those four faces.
Ah, nice. So we only need to worry about the two faces perpendicular to the x-axis, the left face and the right face.
Correct. Let's look at the left face first. It's sitting at x-axis.
Yeah.
What's the electric field strength there?
Plug xA into the formula. E dot E10 IB50 XBD equals OK.
Good. And the right face, it's at x2A.
So Ezone I-10 ISB50 XBD expose O2A. It's right. Stronger there.
Now we need the flux, E.S. We need the direction of the area vector S for each face. Remember, it always points outward from the closed surface.
Okay. For the left face at XA, the outward direction is pointing left in the negative X direction.
Right. So the area vector is like, the field is EO.E10 XB50 XBD day. So the dot product, E.A, is OAA. Wait, the area is A, right? Side length square.
Yes, area is A. So the dot product is OAAAOSA52. That's the flux. See a high AAA party psi SB10A50D.
Perfect. Now for the right face at XTT, the outward normal points right in the positive X direction.
So AGS is plus a show. The field is easier by E10S50 XBDA equals AHEVA. The dot product is AACQP plus a HR. That's A10IB10IB50XBD.
Excellent. So the total flexes of the cube is just the sum of these two since the other four were zero.
Right. Say B10MyP50XBD equals says by E10 on A5050XBD plus says by A10MyXB50XBD plus ASB5010MyXBD equals A52 plus a 52. We can factor out the A52.
Leaving. Now we just need to plug in the numbers. A was 800 NCFUN and the side length A was 0.1 meters.
Okay, punching that in, 800.152 gives about 1.05 nmAc. That's the net flux.
Exactly. And now the easy part. How do we find the charge inside?
Ah, Gauss's law. Gauss's law. S is QO. So Q exceeds A.
Just plug in the flux we found and the value of A. So it was about 8.854 times your NCO.
Right. So Q 8.854 times 10 maybe O, 1.05, gives about 9.27 times 10 AOT2. A tiny amount of charge, but calculable.
See? Even with a non-uniform field, if we can calculate the flux through our chosen Gaussian surface, the cube here, Gauss's law directly gives us the enclosed charge.
That's pretty neat. Okay, let's try the second example. This one has a uniform field, but it flips direction.
Right. This time, the field E is uniform plus 200 INC if X is positive, and E is negative 200 INC if X is negative. So it always points away from the YZ plane.
Okay. And we have a cylinder, right? Circular cylinder length. 20 centimeters, so 0.2 meters, radius 5 centimeters at 0.05 meters, and it's centered right at the origin with its axis along the x-axis.
So half the cylinder is in the Nisiro region, half is in the Kisiro region. The flat ends are at x, I guess 0.1 meters, and x equals plus 0.1 meters.
Got it. We need the flux through each flat end, the curved side, the total flux, and the charge inside. Okay, let's do the ends first. Left end at x 0.1 meters.
Okay, left end, x is negative, so the field E is negative 200 INC. What's the outward normal? Vector S.
It's the left face, so outward is left, negative X direction. So ECS points along A.
Right. So EECO is negative 200 I. Yeah, line, the minus signs cancel, I dot I is 1. So it's just plus 200 face.
And Atticus is the area of the circular face. Area is 0.05 meters of pearl. That's about 0.000785 meters long.
Okay. So the flux through the left face, sub by E10 XB50 XBD, is plus 200 NC 0.000785 meters of SNEC. Plus 1.57 NMESC.
Positive flux. Okay, now the right face at X is plus 200 INC. The outward normal E points right in the plus I direction.
So EEKS is plus 200 I plus SI, that's also positive.
Plus 200 S.
And the area is the same. So the flux through the right face, both by E10 of E50 XBD, is also plus 1.57 NMEC.
Interesting. Same positive flux coming out of both ends. Now, what about the curved side? That seems tricky.
Let's think about it. The electric field, E, is always pointing purely in the X direction, either plus X or negative X.
Okay.
But on the curved side of the cylinder, the outward normal vector S is always pointing radially outwards, perpendicular to the X axis.
Ah. So E and IS are always perpendicular on the curved surface.
Exactly. Everywhere on the curved surface. And if they're perpendicular, what's their dot product?
E is zero. Because cos anti degrees is zero.
Bingo. So the flux through the entire curved side is just zero.
That simplified nicely. So the total net outward flux for the whole cylinder is just the sum of the three parts. Thus, by E10, I have is B50, XBD, plus says by E10, I mean, ISB50, XBD, plus says by E10, I is B50, XBD, plus says by E10, I is B50, XBD, plus says by E10, I have B10, ISB50, XBD, plus says by E10, is B50, XBD curved.
Gauss's law again. Q equals S. Q.854, A to most D, SBNM R2, 3.14 NM is OC.
Which comes out to about 2.78 of 10 in or TD coulombs.
So again, even with that weird field flip, calculating the flux through a well-chosen surface, the cylinder lets us find the enclosed charge using Gauss's law.
It really demonstrates the power of the approach.
So if we really boil it down, The core insight here is that Gauss's law gives us this incredibly useful and often much simpler way to figure out either the electric field or the charge enclosed.
Yeah, instead of getting bogged down in field calculations everywhere.
You pick a strategic closed surface, or sort of imaginary balloon, the Gaussian surface.
Yeah.
And just by looking at the total electric flux going through it, we can directly link that to the total charge inside. Absolutely. It's a truly fundamental principle in electromagnetism. And, you know, its reach extends far beyond just these examples we looked at.
It really feels like a cornerstone concept.
It is. It underpins so much of our understanding of how electric fields behave, especially, as we saw, in situations that have some kind of symmetry.
Okay, and on that note, here's something for you, the listener, to think about. We've used a sphere, a cube, a cylinder. How might Gauss's law make things even simpler if you were dealing with charge distributions that have planar symmetry? Like, imagine a huge flat sheet of charge.
Ooh, good one. What kind of Gaussian surface would you choose then?
Exactly. And maybe think more broadly. What fundamental understanding does this link between enclosed charge and electric flux really give us about the very nature of electric fields themselves? Definitely something worth pondering.
For sure.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.